The Skiffy and Fanny Show is listener-supported, which means basically you guys listen and we feel really good about ourselves. But if you'd also like to help us a little bit, you can go to audibletrial.com/skiffyandfanty, sign up for a 1-month free trial membership, get a free book, which is pretty cool, and the bonus is that it helps us a little bit. So go ahead and check that out at audibletrial.com/skiffyandfanty and enjoy the episode.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
But the Krell forgot one thing, it. Monsters, John. Monsters from the id.
There you go again, always blaming me for everything.
Go switch off!
It's a trap!
This looks extraordinarily bad.
Commencing countdown. T minus 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanny Show, episode 171. As I've said with all the other Worldcon episodes, there's a bit of background noise here, so I've done my best to clean it up, but you just kind of hear some of that noise in the background, but the audio is good otherwise. So enjoy the interview with Chuck Wendig.
All right. Hello, we have Chuck Wendig here today, and then Jen just, like, dropped all her shit. What the hell?
Sorry, I'm busy dropping all my shit.
That's normal.
That was weird. So we have with us Chuck Wendig. Say hi, Chuck.
Hi, Chuck. Oh, wait, I did that wrong. Hi, guys.
No, you did that exactly right.
Hello, people.
You did what he told you to do, which is exactly what the premise we want to set up for the rest of this.
Just let me know how you want me to answer the questions.
Now, rub your head and your belly at the same time.
Oh, God, that powers me down.
Well, last night, Justin established the motorboating of Sean, so that...
Yeah, oh, that's the thing that happens
that's
now?
That's the thing that happens.
Yeah, he motorboated me.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is now going to be on the podcast, so Justin can never get away.
Never, ever get away with motorboating.
Good job, Justin.
So you motivated. So, okay, so this is not your first Worldcon.
It's not my first rodeo Worldcon.
Well, maybe your first rodeo Worldcon.
Yeah, okay. That's true, it is. All right, I have not rodeoed before.
So, really quick, just, how are you enjoying the experience so far?
I'm loving it. It's like a great... I always come out of these things really sort of energized to do more stuff, because sometimes, like, during the year, you start to feel that, like, gradual decline, or like I just want to fall asleep instead of do my work, and then so you meet like writers and fans and it gets you back up.
Okay, excellent. So what have you, I mean, obviously you're on some panels, but
true.
What are some of the highlights of your experience thus far?
I'll tell you, one of the things that's really awesome is meeting like my writing idols.
Yeah.
And telling them like I met Robin Ha the other night, and she was sort of busy, but it was like, oh, that's very nice. So she was, you know, very polite and nice about it. It wasn't like a mace me or anything.
Like an awkward thing.
Yeah, it wasn't an awkward thing. But then the other day, there's a writer I read. A lot of writers, so a lot of people don't read it, but some writers do. Bradley Denton, he's a local Texas guy. Wrote Buddy Holly's Alive and Well on Ganymede and Blackburn. But he kind of disappeared for a while. Hmm. And so he did a reading, and I didn't even know he was coming. So I was like, oh my God, this is one of the guys that made me want to be a writer. So I went up afterward and I did tell him that, and he seemed to actually know who I was, which was kind of odd. Like, my tag was not visible, and he said, oh, you're Chuck, and congratulations on the candle. And I was like, ah. I was like, this is my moment. I can just go home now. Forget the candle. This is it right here. So that was, and he read a new story, and I found out he's got new work coming out. So it was like, that was a cool moment for me. Like, I still get to be a fanboy at the same time I get to be a writer.
Yeah. So that brings up the fact that obviously you got nominated for a Campbell Award.
I did.
And by the time very this goes
subtly.
Up...
Yeah, very subtly.
Put in there.
Wink, wink.
But by the time this goes up, we'll actually know who won.
Yeah. So I predict not me.
You're predicting not you.
I predict not me. And that's
did
okay.
Did you vote for yourself?
I did. I'm such a jerk. I really agonized over that for like a long time. I was like, my finger hovered. I'm like, I should not do that. Why should I do that?
No, like, you should totally do that.
It's my career, I guess.
Because you might be the only one that voted for you.
No. And then if I get no votes, at least I get one. I mean, jeez.
It's a very important thing.
And I'll be like, that's me, I did that. And then I can be proud for that. At least. So.
So obviously, being nominated for something like that is kind of a big deal.
I'm excited about that.
Is this your second year of eligibility? Or?
Second year of eligibility, first nomination.
No. Right. And then after that, it's just regular Hugos.
Yeah, it's just all the right. They just start piling them on. I bring the wagon, and the Hugos roll in. Yeah.
Which would be cool.
Yeah, this will probably be my first and last significant award, if I even get it. So, first.
I don't think so.
Nothing if not humble.
Nothing if not humble.
Yeah, I don't think this would be the last time you're on a ballot.
We'll see.
Pretty sure.
Thank you. I hope you will orchestrate that.
Jinx himself.
Yeah. So. I hope you will rig that up for me.
Oh, yeah.
Because
he's winking at me, everybody. He's winking at me and nudging me.
We hire assassins.
Yeah, I know. I like that.
Don't worry.
You're the best podcast ever. You have assassins. All other podcasts, pay attention.
Ninja robot assassins.
You need some assassins.
That's right. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about your work. So I just bought Blackbirds.
Thank you.
Which it has the sexy cover.
Have a sexy cover. Right.
Both of the books in that particular series are really beautiful covers.
Yeah, that's Joey Hi-Fi doing that work. He's a South African artist.
I didn't even know that.
He's friends with the author Lauren Bucus, who did Sioux City and China Girls. Who she's also
one
of my favorite writers. And so he did her cover for Moxieland when that was actually Angry Robot's first release.
Right.
And then he also did covers for Sioux City, which eventually they had an alternate cover. But he's great.
Did he do the cover with the like, almost look like a pencil drawing cover for Lauren Bucus?
Yeah, it's like a bunch of stuff, sort of, like, the text becomes images, sort of.
Oh, wow, okay.
Tucked in the words, yeah.
Yeah, that's a gorgeous cover.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my favorite cover for Sioux City. Exactly. I have the other one, that's the American
edition. Yeah, the other one's great. The other one's just like, well, that's a nice cover, it's fine.
It's like, it does its job, sort of, kind of.
Yeah.
Not really. Yeah. Sorry, whoever.
Sorry, person, hope you're not listening. Your covers are lovely.
And you've obviously started another set of work. I believe there was an announcement a couple months ago.
Was there? I mean, I have a lot of stuff going on. It's hard to keep track of.
It is kind of.
Well, then tell us about all of it.
Yeah, everything that's going on.
Everything
that's
going on. I have the Miriam Black series, which is Blackbirds and Mockingbird. Miriam Black. You can see how you're going to die when she touches you. I've got the Mookie Pearl series, which that started, first book out in May.
Okay.
That's about kind of this thug who stands between the criminal underworld and the mythic monstrous underworld. It's a little more straight urban fantasy. I have a young adult series called the Heartland series. Under the Empyrean Sky, the first book came out like a couple, 3 weeks ago, I guess.
That's right, yeah. That's fairly
male or female protagonist?
This is a male protagonist.
Damn.
Yeah. Sorry.
Sorry, you saw.
Well, the second book actually takes the female protagonist.
Oh, good. Kind of half. All right, then
you're switching it up.
I have two daughters, so these are the things that I need to worry
Well,
about.
I mean, to be honest with you, though, I wanted to write for, because young adult is not necessarily traditionally written for
that's
boys
true.
Anymore. And the thread is boys don't read, and
I know,
part of why boys
horrible.
Don't read is because there's nothing talking to boys. I think it's a shame boys won't read books of girls. Ultimately, I figure I better try that. Yeah.
And my girls have been reading things for boys for ages now.
Yeah,
already,
I know. So it feels like just revenge, ultimately.
Yeah.
I had a boy story to tell, so I went with it. I got that, and then I have a writing book coming out, which is based off some of my self-published work in my blog.
Yeah.
Kick-Ass Writer comes out in October. My Atlanta Burns series, which is a teenage detective. It's like Veronica Mars meets Nancy Drew plus Adderall. So that's fun. That was self-published originally, and then that got picked up for traditional. So that'll come out.
Is that also with Angry?
No, that's with Skyscape.
Okay.
So it's a lot.
So when do you sleep?
A lot of stuff.
I don't know, but is that German for something? Usually the German words are longer, but I mean, if they're up for brevity, I don't know what sleep means, but I'm sure I get it at some point.
Since you write urban fantasy, and I'm sure you'll have some young adult questions, since every time somebody mentions young adult, your like eyes glisten with joy.
The anime eyes.
So what is it for you that is exciting about urban fantasy as a kind of genre, a broad genre, obviously? But...
This is the wrong answer, but I'm a little lazy. So my brain defaults to imagining fantasy things like in our world, as opposed to being like, oh, it's time to create a whole new like second world experience. Like, I need a nap. No, I'm not doing that. Like New York City, that already exists. I can just write there, and then there's monsters beneath the city, and it's hell, literal actual hell. So, for me, it's like I like a lot of crime stuff, like noir and horror, and that tends to be a little more contemporary. And so when I think of fantasy, I tend to default to that instead of something more traditional.
Okay, so in some sense, that noir, the crime aspect is really kind of one of the driving
forces. Yeah, like the Miriam Black books are, while they have labeled them urban fantasy, I'm not really necessarily 100% comfortable with it. Then again, I don't really know what to call it. It has horror aspect, it has noir. It's a little paranormal romance, a little bit of urban fantasy. So it's a whole lot of stuff going on.
So you must read quite a bit of crime fiction noir. Or
I try to. Yeah, I mean, that whole thing, like, when do you sleep? So I was like, well, when do you read? Before I sleep?
So who are some of your influences from that, like, noir crime, that kind of thing?
If you read guys like... I prefer more modern guys like Charlie Houston, who's awesome.
Okay.
Well, he obviously crosses over into that genre side
he
of it.
He does,
as well.
Yeah.
Stephen Blackmore, a great author. Okay. A friend of mine, too. An excellent author. Dwayne Straczynski, amazing. And Fatale, if you're a good comic, like Fatale. Again, that crosses over into more like, you know, like 1930s, 1950s era, like pulp and occult, but it's great stuff.
Have you read Brian Evanson, perchance?
The name is familiar, but I have not.
I've forgotten the title. There's one that's sort of like a noir book involving a cult. And the guy, like, there's a lot of, like, losing of limbs in this story.
Nice. Fan of those stories.
Yeah, so I'll try to remember. It's Brian Evanson, but I've forgotten the title off the top of my head. But something you might enjoy.
Brian Evanson.
So do you feel that noir crime fiction, because you mentioned a lot of the writers, you say they cross over into, like, weird...
It seems to be really... Like, well, I consider all of this new pulp. I call it new pulp.
New pulp.
And I don't mean, like, in the sense that pulp is like, oh, it's just lazy, it's popular entertainment writing. But I think what happens is, you know, like, when my mom read books, it was like, if it has the words Robert and Ludlum on it, she's going to buy it and read it. It doesn't matter. Like, I could write it on crayon in a book and she would buy it. But I think, like, a lot
That'd
of the writers,
handy.
Yeah, wouldn't it? Like, you know, just read this book I wrote. It says Robert Ludlum. It's called Robert Ludlum. You know, I think people in my generation have read very widely and broadly, and so when we then return to write things, it's not. I don't want to be pigeonholed into one genre, and so I often don't want to be pigeonholed into one genre in a single book. Like, I like to do a lot of stuff in the book. I like to mash that stuff up, and, you know, remix culture is large and in charge. So. For me, that's what I consider new pulp to be.
Okay, so the mishmashing of
stuff. Yeah, kind of
that
mishmashing, very cross-genre stuff. Like, young adult, one of the things, to move into that a little bit, one of the things I really love about young adult is the genres are not very well codified.
No.
It's the Wild West in terms of that. You can kind of get away with a lot of stuff. You go to Barnes & Noble, and, like, while they're starting to kind of clumsily shelve them into things, it's still, like, sometimes just like, blah, like, yeah, it's young adult. Just...
There's a young person in it.
Yeah, there's young people. Buy this book. And you're like, well, I don't know what I'm getting. I like that. I like not knowing what I'm getting. But adult, like, sometimes they still like it to be like, well, is it paranormal romance? Does it have all the tropes? And you're like, I don't know. I don't care.
Yeah.
I want to write a good story. Is that okay?
But urban fantasy does have a tendency to have a large number of sort of the noir influences.
Yeah.
I mean, that seems to be...
Yeah, I mean, it's fairly common in a lot of
Richard
Cadden
is very, like, absolutely.
Which is not necessarily a bad thing. I think that's why a lot of people got into it.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, when you look at a great deal of urban fantasy are essentially, like, private detective stories.
Actually, that's true. Like, Chris Holmes, the Dead Harvest, is... In fact, actually, he is, by nature, a crime writer, first and foremost. So.
Yeah, I just picked up his first book, too.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, because Angry Robot's basically the only good bookseller in there.
Yeah, that's actually true.
Yeah, they really are.
They're true. They have and the chain are all the way in the back in the corner, like bad children facing the wall.
But they're awesome.
They're awesome. I love them.
But it is really interesting that, because I hadn't really thought about that when you look at urban fantasy, so many of them are in basically private detective stories. And
the vast majority that I've read, which granted I haven't read.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff, yeah.
You even look at some of the lighter urban fantasy, and they still have the plot line follows essentially a detective plot line.
Right, you got to find out the mystery.
Is not a detective,
so
they're all mystery stories.
Right.
Not all, but I mean, and that's part of our world sort of meeting the fantasy world in the first place. There's a mystery to that, so it stands to reason that it's going to be sort of central to the.
Yeah, I kind of like with Blue Blaze. I kind of instead of going for something detective, I went. The character is actually a criminal,
right?
And he's not necessarily trying to find out a mystery. In fact, he's too dumb to do that. He's not a very smart character. So it's kind of, to me, it's a little more of a Goodfellas vibe than it is like a detective vibe. I kind of want to go with that side of like a crime thing.
It's kind of switching it around a little bit.
Yeah, he's trying to stop things from happening, and he's trying to, you know, his daughter is actually coming up against him, so it's not necessarily like he's trying to solve a mystery. But that is frequently a mode of storytelling in young adult.
I wonder why that is.
Or not young adult, urban fantasy. Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's just because that's the influences, maybe.
Yeah, maybe the people, a lot of people who write it, they're influenced by crime fiction.
Yeah, and it's easy. I don't mean to suggest it's lazy, but it is easy. Like, murder mysteries or detectives, like, that's like a story. Like, right there, you're, like, you're just like, I have a story. Yeah. Whatever I'm going to tell, whatever world it's in, nailed it.
And you look at the publishing environment and the fact that one of the few bookstores, the few types of bookstores that were surviving sort of through the of everything dying were mystery bookstores.
Yeah, that's true.
So from a publishing viewpoint, you want in on that.
Yes.
Yeah. And it is, it that dominates in many respects. The bestsellers lists are basically mysteries and crime thrillers.
Yep. Related. Even when they're literary. I mean, right. Something like Gone Girl is, I mean, it's a literary crime novel, essentially.
Really? I didn't.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's
going to get a lot. You're going to have to read that list.
Yeah. So, okay, so going to go back to your YA just really quick. We've kind of mentioned that you were going to be switching protagonists between the two books.
Yeah.
But obviously the first book has recently come out, you said, I think 3 weeks ago.
Yes.
From the time of the recording, so probably like a month-ish. So what was the kind of impetus for switching to writing young adult? I mean, we kind of mentioned a little bit, but kind of get hashed out a little more.
I had like kind of three reasons. I mean, the first thing, I had just a story to tell in that space. To me, that was the most important thing. Like, I had a story that, in my mind, had a teenage protagonist, and so there was no reason not to write to it in a way that spoke to a younger audience as well as the older audience. I mean, there's certain issues, and I'm not fond of the any sort of young adult that is flinches away from actual teen behavior and actual teen issues. I think that fails the genre when it does it.
That was actually a question in a YA panel that we went to the other day.
Oh, yeah.
You know, where's the line in YA?
Yeah.
And Stina answered, there are no lines.
Oh, that, agree, it wasn't a YA panel. That was the fantasy panel.
Oh,
but that
the fantasy
panel,
yeah.
But they may have mentioned YA,
they were talking
too.
About YA, because she's working on a YA.
Yeah, I have a YA panel, so I think that'll come up.
Yeah,
YA
and, you know, which is, thank goodness, there's no lines.
Yeah. Here's what happened with my book, right? So Amazon has this program called the Amazon Prime program, right, where you basically get these free books early on, and I think it was at a point, from what I understand anyway, you had to review like 50% of the books you picked. Well, from also what I understand, that number has changed to 100% of the books that you pick. So my book comes out, and a lot of people, or actually before it comes out, a lot of people had picked this up from the Vine program. And these are like moms who like Twilight, and they're like, my kids do not curse and have sex. I mean, my book is not a filth fest. It's not like it's like
right.
a teenage orgy book.
No,
but it has like you know,
right.
It has a few pieces of profanity. It's effectively a PG-13 level of profanity.
Right.
But they're like, oh, it's filthy. My kids were sitting with me reading it. And they're like, we don't talk this way, mom. And so I like started to get this barrage of like 1- and 2-star reviews. I'm like, no, Amazon my program, you doomed me. But thankfully it kind of washed out then. Yeah, people were like, oh, this actually...
The same people came on and were like, you're a bunch of dumbasses. Your children already swear.
Right, exactly. They do this whether you know it or not.
Well, because those kinds of individuals, you know, I mean, they may be right. Their kids may not swear because they talk and don't.
That is very true, absolutely.
But they live in a version of reality where it's like, but you can't say that the rest of the kids don't.
Precisely.
You know, because they do.
Yeah.
These teenagers are swearing, they're having sex, they're
the kids
doing
today,
drugs.
With their hair and their clothes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're crazy.
On my lawn, doing drugs.
On your lawn?
Smoking dope on my lawn. Where do I live? I don't think I fully answered your question before. We've gotten off a tangent.
We're good at
that. That happens. No, so also, I had a kid at the time. And so I was like, I wanted to write a book where he could read it before he was like 37. So while I understand young adult is still not going to be...
Oh, 37, right.
Yeah, because that's like my black birthday.
Right.
He's allowed to read that when he's 37 years old.
God, I'm really screwing up by letting my kids read Game of Thrones at 11 and 12.
Yep. Yep, they're going to be... Yeah, they're pretty much ruined. You might just want to put them on the curb at this point. Let them go. Put them in a box. Marked free panda.
So much therapy.
Yeah. Free kittens. And someone just drives by and takes your kids away.
So 37, that gives me a sort of a timeline.
Yeah.
I can let my children read it. So they should have been reading it like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So you had a kid. This is number two reason.
That's the number two reason. And then, the crass commercial reason. There's actually really good money if you have to tell. The advances tend to be stronger. Sometimes you get a wider audience, a bigger publication reach. So all those things kind of came together, and I really hurried to like, I wrote this book in like the month before my son was born.
Oh, wow.
And then it took a year to workshop it to make it not crap. And then it went on submission.
And you got it.
Yeah. There was like a book auction. It was my first book auction. It was very exciting.
Oh,
totally.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, okay. So, this is actually a thing that's come up. A couple of people we've talked to who have switched to writing a YA book or something of that nature have actually brought up, you know, either they're being asked by the publisher to do it or there's just a clear financial reason to do it. I'm curious, do you feel as a writer that this is going to help your non-YA work by extension? I mean, it probably
really,
will a little, but...
I like to think maybe in the future it will, but I don't expect it will automatically.
Okay.
And that's okay. I'm totally okay with that.
Do you think that's because that the audiences that typically read YA and then read, like, I guess regular fantasy, that there is a separation?
The Venn diagram is probably a little further, the two circles are probably a little further apart than with, like, my other work. I think there's a crossover. There's still some overlap. It's not a universal thing. I hope it feeds into it. I don't know how... That thing is, everybody thinks they know what everything's going to do. Nobody knows. They're like, oh, we have a strong social media presence. But yeah, but all these people are not one-to-one buyers of my books. Over time, a lot of these people do, they tell me, oh, your tweets are funny and strange, and then I read your blog, and 6 months later I bought your books. So it's not like, you know, they click on my blog post and suddenly they just download all my books and I get all this money. So you don't know what works. You just never know.
That's true.
Well, and you look at, it's not like every Harry Potter fan went out and bought her mystery novel.
Right.
Or the new book she wrote where they didn't even know it was her.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So, no, you don't know. I mean, the thing is, I just want to, and I think actually in the way that she did her, you know, her mystery novel that no one knew she wrote, I kind of just write what I would want to write, and I know that's not always the smartest business decision, but that's, I think, a good creative decision, and it maybe keeps things interesting for me.
Yeah. And if you have the freedom to do it, at least on a routine publishing scale, do it. Yeah.
Because, I mean, like, that's usually some advice that you get, is, like, don't do that, concentrate on the genre. But I was like, my goal was to diversify out of the gate so I don't get pigeonholed into anything. Yeah. I mean, these are all books that, you know, are coming out or haven't come out in the last 2 years. So it's been a pretty wild ride.
Do you have plans to write any science fiction, perchance?
I do, but I don't know when I'll do that. I do.
I just thought it was... Because you said you were going to diversify, and it's like...
Yeah, I kind of want to write it all.
All of it?
Yeah, all of it. I don't know when my erotica begins.
And that's going to be pretty filthy, I suspect.
It probably would be.
Maybe he can do the slash fic between you and Justin.
Where I'm getting motorboated.
I'm in.
Every page.
Yeah. It needs to happen. Yeah.
Just every page motorboating. Over the clothes motorboating.
And if you're good, you can call it good. You'll put some fantasy elements in it, and it'll get nominated for a Hugo.
Yeah, the best erotica Hugo. My favorite. Yeah.
Short form.
Short form erotica Hugo. I love that one.
It's a great award.
It's a great award. Yeah. It's shaped a little unusually, but
so are most of the awards.
Yeah, so are most of the awards.
Well, we are waiting for your biography, though.
Yeah.
That's obviously the next
one. That's a good one. Yeah. It'll be all lies. Filth and lies.
Okay, so we got your sort of urban fantasy. You're switching from writing sort of more traditional, or I say traditional with like quotey things around it because that doesn't mean anything.
quote,
to writing, kind of switching the protagonist to this crime thriller, and then you've got the young adult.
Yeah.
So that's a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot.
And then
I write the blog, which is also kind of a lot.
Right, and then that's coming out as a book. What made you decide to do that?
Well, I self-published my bigger blog posts, especially the lists. I self-publish those, and then I add new stuff, and I revise it and publish it. It was initially began as a way to monetize my blog because as the views started to go up, my posting fees started to go. Like my one post actually was like, "We're kicking you out. You've ruined everything for us. You've got to go." And I was like, "Oh, that's unfortunate." So I had to scramble to get a new host. And it was very expensive. So it was a good way to monetize that, and it's actually gone well beyond that point. The blog is very self-sufficient at this point. Then Writer's Digest said, "Well, because I originally pitched it as like a book to my agent." Nonfiction book, and they were like, "You have no platform." And I was like, "Yeah, a writing blog with lots of viewers would not constitute a strong quote unquote platform." Fine. But then eventually, Writer's Digest came along and they said, "Well, we want to compile some of these books and do some new stuff in them and put it in print."
So, how much new content is there going to be for the book?
I think the book has 1,001 ways, quote unquote. So, it's 1,001 of my listicles, list items. I'm trying to think of how many, there's 5 or 6 new actual full lists in there. And then revised everything else is a little more PG-13. They were
really?
They wanted to keep. Well, but you know what? Here's why that benefits, because I don't make it into classrooms necessarily, like at the college level. Sometimes they do, but it's usually like printed out, like, oh, here's your printouts. Like, we're not going to...
Yeah. We're not going to give you the whole book.
Yeah, this could actually go into a bookstore. It still has all of the curses except for pretty much the F word. That was the one thing they're like, we can't have any. I'm like, really? Not a single F word? They're like, nope, none. You can have anything else. And I say some, still some raunchy stuff, but like, no, that can stay. Just don't say the F word there.
That's the line, huh?
Your standards are bizarre, but I will comply.
I wonder about that every time I watch television with my kids and something shows up on there and you're like...
Yeah, but you can't say that.
But what?
Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And with the, like, the line between a PG-13 movie and a rated R movie is how many F-bombs there is a lot of times.
Yeah, PG-13, you get one, and a non-sexual F-bomb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a really weird rule.
That was the funny thing, too, about the young adult early reviews that came in. All of the people... uniformly were like the sex and the profanity, but totally nothing wrong with the violence I have in that book. And there's some hard, nasty moments of teen violence, like Hunger Games level violence, like kids killing kids violence, and that's totally cool, bro, no worries.
But sex kids kill and kids. Dirty words bad.
Sex and dirty words, welcome to America, everybody. You can bludgeon kids with a rock and that's fine. Just don't love them.
But if they touch each other,
I'm glad you mentioned that, actually, because we were discussing that with Sam Sykes yesterday.
Oh, yeah?
The idea of violence and being completely desensitized to it, and so therefore it's okay.
It's totally okay.
Yeah, and he was saying that in reference to this idea of the grimdark, which is a weird subgenre that we're inventing.
Which makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Yeah. It's just a label that some of the like Joe Abercrombie types are taking.
Gritty fantasy to be grimdark.
Really, really uber gritty fantasy where... Yeah. It's just like violence and arms get cut off and like people are eating
them. Occasionally rapey.
Yes.
Yeah. Occasionally rapey fantasy.
I'll check out on that.
Yeah.
That's probably my line.
That is my line as well. Yeah.
So.
Not writing it, not reading.
But yeah, but what Sam was suggesting is that, you know, we see so much violence, and so even in this particular example, that maybe on some level they're like, yeah, like the violence doesn't bother us because
it doesn't. Yeah.
You know, and I'll say it just because I'm gonna say it, but probably those people are quite religious, conservative religious.
I feel at least conservative socially, if not religious. But some of them did seem to be, because I looked at their other reviews, like, what are you else reviewing? And
And one of the weird things about that I've noticed when you talk to a lot of very conservative religious people is when it comes to sexual content, language, they're really not comfortable with that. They don't want you to talk about that. But when you look at the Bible, they're like, well, God is committing genocide. You know, there's all of this horrible stuff.
Yeah, there's like guys with like eight wives and they're selling them. And it's like, oh, it's a...
Yeah, there's a lot of that kind of violence.
The sex scenes are pretty explicit.
Well, there is a lot of sex in there, but they don't talk about that very much. Like, if you mention the incest in the Bible,
well, it's
that
great thing when they, like, tell you you're not allowed to, you know, well, gays are bad, but then you, like, quote any other passage from Leviticus, and it's, like, beards and shellfish and all kinds of crazy things.
Yeah, stone your children
and
they're
like, well, that's not, we don't listen to that part. No, isn't that fancy for you?
Well, stoning your children is legal in California now, so.
Thank God.
Is it? No.
It's close.
Finally.
Finally, you can stone your kids.
Yeah, finally, I'm getting something out of this deal.
Well, you just had a kid, so.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, you've got a little while.
Time to move to California.
Yeah.
By the time you actually might want to stone your child, probably will actually be completely legal and not just for medical purposes.
Nice. Yeah, I hear like the teenage years are like the toddler years times too. Like it's like revenge of toddlerdom.
I don't know.
Selfish.
They
return to like just selfish little id babies.
Yeah.
Who want to be the gods of their own world.
Well, I mean, that's something that we've warned our children of for years, because they're 11 and 12.
Oh,
and my
yeah.
daughter actually, like, 2 weeks ago was like, I'm turning 13 in 4 months! I was like, fuck you!
I know. You're going to be a werewolf in 13 months, basically. You're turning into a monster.
Monster.
That's what's happening to you.
And we've always warned them, you know, like, okay, you're going to grow up to be an asshole. Complete batshit crazy asshole. And I want you to know that now.
Yeah.
So that when you become this asshole and I let you know that you are one, you don't freak out.
Yeah. And you will, and I will.
I will, and we'll
the cycle will continue.
And it'll be so much fun.
Yeah, yeah.
So much fun. Yeah. It's exciting. Then,
I was a terrible teenager. I think most teenagers are a little bit.
Yeah, you were a horrible teenager in band and stuff.
Yeah.
No. Well, that's... I was in marching band. I'm terribly sorry.
Wow.
Suddenly become a saint because I was in marching band? Have you been in marching band?
No, I have not.
It's
been in marching
sex
band.
And drugs on parade to an ooping timpani.
Half of that is
that'll
right.
Be a sex book.
No, I'm not kidding. Like when that line.
Which half? Sex or drugs? I gotta know.
There's a lot of sex.
A lot of sex in marching band.
And I don't just mean like normal everyday type stuff.
I'm really
like,
glad my daughter.
We're talking
quit
like because... like threesomes and locker rooms. I'm not kidding. That line from American Pie, like, you know, yeah, in band camp. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of that is actually happened.
I am so horribly disturbed right now. Wow. I'm never going to look.
I've heard,
I think you've got a young adult book in you, sir. A young adult erotica about band camp.
Yeah, I'm sure I'm going to sell
marching
that.
Marching band.
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure there's a lot of that already.
Yeah. I'm thinking
urban
magic,
fantasy,
marching
so
band.
That Willow is not just, you know, Willow from Buffy. She's also her character with the flute, and it's epic.
It's her witch flute. This is getting on.
This is getting very strange.
Oh, so our podcast,
yeah. It's that point. Yeah, I believe that.
Okay, so we're running on about close to a half hour, and I don't want to keep you too long.
No, sure.
Yeah, but we can keep you forever.
No, I don't. Yeah. Yeah. You guys are abandoning me.
Yes.
That's fine. I accept this. I'll follow you to your panel. I'll just keep talking, even if you're recording. You're like, well, so ask me something else. So anyway, in 1976, I was born, and wait up.
Okay, so really quick, so all of this stuff's coming out. What are you currently working on? I mean, we've mentioned a little bit, but kind of talk more explicitly what you're working on.
Right now I'm editing the second book of my Heartland trilogy, which is tentatively titled called Blightborn. It's like twice as big as the first book and twice as crazy. And it does a lot more head-hopping with the protagonists. The first book is primarily from the perspective of the teenage boy, Kale, who's sort of rebelling against these rich people who live in the sky who punish everybody with corn. Corn punk, everybody.
Sorry. Corn?
Corn punk. Evil, bloodthirsty, GMO corn. Corn apocalypse.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
Really?
Okay. Yeah.
I'm very excited about it now.
Hopefully. Yeah, I'm hoping it doesn't suck. That's my fingers crossed on that one. So I'm working on that now. I have my edits. I have to finish that up. And then I've got four books to write this year. I've got the next Mookie Pearl book. I've got the next Atlanta Burns book. I write a series for a game company called Evil Hat. I've done the first book. Called Dinocalypse. So I'm finishing that series. And then I know there's a fourth one. There's a fourth one. Oh, the Heartland book 3. The final book in the trilogy. So.
By the way, Chuck looks utterly terrified by the prospect of having to write four books in the next.
I've written three this year.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice.
No, actually, four books is all right. I'll manage.
That is really a damn fast pace.
I bare minimum write 2,000 words a day, and that's like a deep plus like on my grading. I try to get about 3,500 words if possible.
Wow. So you're really pushing it because I think like the Philip K. Dick did like 12 novels in a year.
Yeah, I couldn't quite do that.
Yeah, but he was also probably like on acid. Yeah. And
that's a pretty good, sure. That's a good idea.
Well, there's not.
It's been a while. So that actually might not be a good idea. It took me 5 years to write Blackbirds, and it took me 30 days to write The Secret.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you find it gets easier now that you're being published and kind of?
Well, now that I know
process?
What I'm doing a little bit, like Blackbirds, I was missing a crucial lesson, which was for me to outline. Like I am a pantser by heart, but a plotter by necessity. I have to do it. Even a little bit. Like, it doesn't have to be, like a 10-page really detailed. But it's got to be, like, a page of, like, here's what is going to happen. Or I'm fucking dead.
I write a little bit. So, Jen doesn't because she's a loser, but...
A smart, probably financially savvy loser, so...
But as a writer, you know, there's obviously a lot of people who don't... changed our method, so you found that you're kind of a right as you go, but then you said, but I got a fucking outline.
I have to do that first, yeah. It's okay if I don't follow it, but I gotta do it.
Did you find that it was difficult to start outlining in terms of keeping your interest in the story?
Well, no, it's not so much that. It was the idea was what bothered me. Like, I had, the way I sort of, like, Blackbirds, I floundered for 5 years, didn't know what to do with it, and so I kind of cheated. There was a screenwriting competition. And it was like, well, if you get it, you get a mentorship with this guy who specializes in adaptation. It was Steven Susko, who did the two Grudge films and a Jack Ketchum adaptation. So I was like, well, I'm going to turn my unfinished piece of crap novel into a screenplay, and then I'll turn it back into a novel. Like, because the screenplay is kind of a blueprint anyway. It's almost like, you know, it's easy. Easy, he says. So I won, thankfully, but then it's like the worst prize ever because it's like a year of homework. So... And the first thing he was like, well, you have to ally. And I was like, no, silly screenwriter Hollywood man. That's what they do in La La Land. But out here in novel world, we listen to our muse and the unicorn and breath and whatever. And he's like, no, we're going to just do an ally. And I'm not going to do any further until you ally. And so I, like, you know, stomped my feet and knocked things over like a enraged chimpanzee. And then finally I sat down to do it. And like a day later, I had an ally. And I'm like, oh, it's done now. Like, I know what the story's doing. Like, that was stupid. So he's like, I've been, like, 5 years I've been not doing this. It's stupid.
So what's the bare minimum length of a work that you feel like you have to do an outline for?
You mean,
or
like,
do you have to outline everything?
No, I don't. Like, if it's like even a novella or something like that, yeah. I don't necessarily have to outline a novella. It's almost like an outline by itself, and it's easy enough to rewrite, but I don't feel like... But a novel, if you get like 80,000 words of like unfocused old person lost in a mall prose, you're like, oh, just burn it. Put it in a bag and burn that. And then, so, yeah. The outline saves me work.
So it actually has been very beneficial.
Yeah.
Not least of all because you're writing like 8,000 books a week now.
Yes, and it also helps me like now because my agent was also an editor once upon a time, so she's very savvy with story. So I can hand her the outline, even if it's just a page. I mean, like, does this even make sense? Does this work? And then before I begin writing an awful crap novel, I can get that tinkered stuff down and straight. So.
How much do you tend to deviate from the original outline?
It's different for every book. I've never really deviated more than like maybe like 25-30%. Sometimes the ending is what deviates.
Right.
As you get to the ending, you start to kind of fracture and the glass starts to break. So sometimes then on rewriting, I will re-outline the book and usually in a more robust way to have like a sense. Like Blue Blazes required some serious content rejiggering.
Okay.
So that I like actually re-outlined the whole book after it was done the first draft.
So in a sense, you kind of, even though you're outlining, you're kind of laying out the structure, you end up finding out that, in fact, some of that has to kind of...
Yeah, that's the thing. People, like, some authors feel... I mean, everybody has an emotional way of approaching it, so that's fine. But
sure.
They feel like the outline steals their magic somehow, and it's like, well, you're not actually writing the book yet. I mean, writing the book steals the magic. It all steals the magic at one point or another. I was like, just getting, like, a basic... It's like if you're taking a trip, it's not unreasonable to figure out a loose journey map, like, you know, where you're going. You can take an exit if you think it's prettier that way. But it's nice to just have a sense that I should head east instead of west.
Yeah. I don't remember who it was just recently. I heard some author quoted saying that the writing part is the best part, and then you're done and it sucks.
Yeah, it's entirely inaccurate. Yeah. I like editing now, too. I've come to love editing.
Really?
Oh,
yeah, I feel like a book is really made in the editing.
Isn't that just, like, self-immolation?
Not. There's a point. If you can do it right, if you can trick your stupid brain, and if you write a lot, it actually helps easier.
Right.
Or it makes it easier. Where you have to treat it like some other asshole wrote the book.
Oh,
and once you feel like it's just some other guy, you're like, well, I'm going to fix this junk. This guy was very stupid here, so we're going to fix this. I don't like this crap that he wrote. So it gets easier.
Is that something that you have to come back to, like, after a period of time?
Well, the goal is to give as much time as possible, but on deadlines, it's not always ideal. So, like, there are little tricks. It's like, I write in it. Like, every book, one of my only weird writing peccadilloes is that I like to change the font to something that feels like the book. Like, the font has to be unique for each book. Then in the editing, I always change it back to Times New Roman. So it reads like a book, and it looks different. It doesn't look the same on the screen as when I wrote it, so it feels like someone else kind of did that.
Please tell me you never write in Comic Sans.
I've written entire books in Comic Sans. And then I burned my eyes out and went to hell and learned about my sins. Thankfully, they gave me a second shot on this earth.
I just find it really fascinating, like, that you're basically tricking your brain.
I'm tricking my brain. My brain's stupid, so it's like, if I can, like, it's like a cat with, like, a laser pointer. If I can get it to go over there and do something for a minute, I will do that. I'm not above manipulating myself.
There's another wonderful line from Chuck Wendig. Editing, to get editing to work, you basically have to treat it like it's a laser pointer.
Yeah, yep, yep.
That's adorable.
Stupid cat that is my brain.
Well, I think we're getting pretty close. So, really quick, just let everybody know where they can hunt you down.
Yes.
And send hate mail and that kind of thing.
There's a game preserve in Texas, and I roam wild.
I have his phone number, and I am selling it off.
Nice.
Yeah.
Time to burn this phone. Damn it. All of my many stalkers will be paying a high price. You can find me at my blog at terribleminds.com, TerribleMinds.com. And I'm big on the Twitters, as the kids say. First name, last name, Chuck Wendig at Twitter.
Awesome.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you. It was really good to talk to you.
Awesome.
If you would like to send us hate mail on this episode or any other topics we've covered, you can do so in a number of ways. You can send us an email.
skiffyandfanty@gmail.com.
You can send us a tweet.
@skiffyandfanty.
Leave a comment on the blog.
skiffyandfanty.com.
Go to Google Plus.
Shawnee Jen.
And or Facebook.
The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Our intro music comes from Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
Another weak human afraid to face death.
I fart in your general direction.
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you. Always.
End of line.